Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 18th day of January, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Gall. And there are so many ways we could start off today, from the sublime to the idiotic to the outright ridiculous. But I've got to go with this one, because as you know, your host is a pilot. I have talked for a long time that if there was a proof of the fact that the Zyklon B injection, as a part of the bioweapon program, the COVID-1984 Let's Destroy the World genocide plan, this one has to be pretty close to the top of that stinking heap. The FAA ignoring the mandate for safety, and not only allowing, but even encouraging the mandating of pilots to take the Zyklon B and then go fly planes full of people in spite of the fact that they're medically unfit to fly. And now we know it's even worse than what your host has been saying, along with a lot of others, for well over a year. Here's the headline from Steve Kirsch's Substack and newsletter. The FAA has very quietly and now tacitly admitted that it's the EKGs of pilots, which are also mandated as part of that let's not pay any attention to it anymore first class medical certification, that are no longer normal. Yeah, he says we ought to be concerned, very concerned. And the proof is in the pudding. And he offers one more in your face, unbelievably evil proof. In October 2022, there was a version of the FAA Guide for Aviation Medical Examiners that was released, in which the FAA quietly widened the EKG parameters beyond what was once the normal range. That would be pre-Zyklon B. And they didn't just widen the range by a little, but by a whole lot. And it was done after the rollout of, yeah, guess what, the vaccine mandate. This is extraordinary, says Kirsch. They did it hoping nobody would notice, and it actually worked for a while because nobody caught it. But hey, you can't hide these things forever. And what we now have is a tacit admission from Big Brother that the COVID-1984 not vaccine has literally damaged the hearts of many, many commercial pilots. Not just a few, a lot, and a whole lot of damage too. And the cardiac harm isn't, of course, limited to pilots. Says Kirsch, my best guess right now, based on the statistics that he's spent a long time looking at, and this, by the way, is consistent with other reports we've seen out of Europe, folks, over 50 million Americans have sustained some sort of heart damage from the stroke poke. And that's on top of what we already knew right up front, but has been proven by the deaths and disabilities of so many people since. The not vaccine not only isn't a real vaccine, but it makes people not less but more likely to get COVID. They're more likely to be hospitalized when they do, and they're more likely to die, not only from COVID, but from anything else that their weakened immune system may make them susceptible to. But don't worry, you can't sue the bastards that have brought this evil upon the nation. They fixed the law, such as it now exists, so that they aren't even liable for damages. Not doctors, not drug companies, not Big Brother. After all, you, whether you were coerced into it or not, ended up taking the vaccine of your own, well, at least semi-free will. It's not like you were forced, really, even though if you wanted a job or a family or you didn't want to be ostracized or any number of perfectly reasonable excuses for taking, say, the mark of the beast real soon now, too. No, you weren't coerced into it. You were duped. And there were even lots of people warning, including this show and this host and so many others for over 2 years now, not to take the, at best, untested gene therapy, even though most of those warnings were, as we now see too, highly censored. The story goes like this. On October 24, 2022, the FAA quietly, without any announcement, widened the EKG requirements necessary for pilots to pass the first-class medical, the kind of certification once required for things like commercial airline pilots. Now, don't get me wrong, they still require it, folks, but like FDA approval, it's been reduced to not much more than a joke. There's a parameter called PR, a measure of heart function, which used to have a mandated range of between 0.12 to 0.2. But now it goes from that same 0.12 all the way up to 0.3 and potentially even higher, which is a wide range and even accommodates people with known cardiac injuries. In the story, Kirsch goes on to quote cardiologist Tom Levy, who is literally appalled by what's been done. He should be. So should all of us. Although we simply have no excuse for being surprised at this point. And what's happened of late? Well, not only are pilots who should be grounded for medical reasons still playing Russian roulette with the lives of gullible passengers, it's that cardiologists have started to notice the damage post-vaccine. And let's not forget all of the sudden adult deaths, coincidentally, started post-vaccine as well. Why, ask yourself, folks, just how many high-profile cases have you seen just in the last week? Writes Kirsch, I know of a study of 177 people in Puerto Rico, 97% of whom had taken the Zyklon B, aged 8 through 84. 70% of those When screened for cardiac injury using the FDA-approved testing device from HeartCare Corporation, exhibited objective signs of cardiac injury. There was also a study done on pilots. It's being published in the Epoch Times later this week, which indicated heart damage in over 20% of all the pilots screened. Let me put it this way. Would you fly a commercial airplane if there was a 1 in 5 chance at least one engine had a known mechanical issue prior to flight? Yeah, they got a spare up there, right? Bottom line, and vitally important, the FAA knows that the hearts of pilots have been injured by the COVID-1984, and this is why I call it Zyklon B. And, of course, again, it's a not vaccine. It's an mRNA technique used to modify people's DNA. And they were coerced into taking it, even if legally they don't quite call it that. After all, you may have had a gun to your head, but ultimately you went along, didn't you? Still, the number of pilots is huge. The cardiac damage is extensive. Passenger safety, no doubt about it. Whether the sheeple flying the crowd killers know it or not, is compromised. And those who promulgated the lie are still trying to double down. The right thing, says Kirsch, would be for the FAA to come clean and admit that they lied to the American public that the COVID not vaccine has now injured 20% or more of all still flying pilots. And the fact that you haven't seen that, and guess what, folks, almost certainly aren't going to, tells you everything you need to know. Oh, yeah, and while we're on the subject, here's one more related story from the, oh, you've got to be kidding me, files. The Biden-Fuhrer regime is back to pushing the idiotic face diapers on commercial airplanes again. I guess if they don't care whether you live or die because of an incapacitated pilot, why would they hesitate at forcing you to rebreathe your own exhaust gases? Here's the story. Biden regime lawyers for the Department of Justice on Tuesday made the argument, asinine though it might be, before the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals after a federal judge last April struck down the unconstitutional, idiotic, counterproductive federal travel mask mandate that, quote, the department continues to believe that the order requiring masking in the transportation corridor is a valid exercise of the authority Congress has given CDC. To protect the public health. Oh, yeah, and to kill people whenever we darn well feel like it. This, they said, is an important authority the department will continue to work to preserve. Because, let me say it clearly, folks, you peons still need to be told, even forced to know who's boss. And even though the Biden-Fuhrer, again lying, said that mask wearing at least once was a personal choice and declared that the plandemic, he didn't read the cue card correctly, is over, is still fighting to reinstate the idiotic mask mandate. This is an IQ test, folks, and if you put up with any of that crap, you fail. From there, on we go to the story that probably would have headlined the news today were it not for the fact that so many three-letter federal agencies really are still trying to get you killed. Hey, let's put it this way. Would you believe they're still lying about it, too? And this one, I'll admit, ought to be a thigh slapper. As Joe Hoff says for his piece in the Gateway Pundit, you can't make this stuff up. Former CNN mouthpiece, lying Brian Stelter, actually was invited to the WEF. He was one of the few, I guess, that was so thrilled he showed up, where he led the panel on disinformation. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Who better to spout disinformation about disinformation? This is absurd, though, says Hoft. Stelter was the king of fake news at the Criminally Negligent Network and the laughingstock of those who knew the facts that he was constantly trying to label as lies, disinformation, fake news, and whatever other big whoppers the Ministry of Truth came up with and put on his cue card for him to read any given day. Whether it was the Mueller sham, COVID-1984, or fill in the blank, Stelter was always pushing fake news. This is why it was funny, they say, that he was the guy picked to lead the disinformation discussion about disinformation, during which one participant actually came right out and said the following. The U.S. would soon have to have fake news laws because they don't care about the First Amendment anymore anyway, which once protected the God-given right to freedom of speech and even freedom of the press, if you can still believe that. But EU official Vera Jourova says she has a better idea. The U.S. will soon have illegal hate speech laws, said the European Union official on the WEF disinformation panel, along with a bevy of other, let's try to be polite here, folks, prevaricators. I think this is a related story. It concerns Representative Sick Sheila Jackson Lee, who at least one of the pieces from Red State says is long in the running for being the most vapid member of Congress. Uh-oh, did I just commit a hate crime? Has introduced proposed legislation that would make political criticism by white people against minorities a federal crime. The bill proposes that any white person who vilifies any non-white person and has their words end up on socialist media accessible by, get this, quote, persons who are predisposed to engage in any action in furtherance of a white supremacy-inspired hate crime would themselves be guilty of a federal hate crime. Yeah, it's so broad you could drive a Mack truck through it for the obvious and a whole bunch more reasons if you read this bit of idiocy. But let's turn to the Jonathan Turley piece, reprinted via Zero Hedge, who puts it this way. Again, remember, from the perspective of a leftist constitutional scholar. The anti-free speech movement, he wrote, in the United States continues to grow with alarming speed among writers, journalists, sick, academics, and most importantly, he says, Democratic members of Congress, who are now openly calling for censorship and the manipulation of what citizens see and read. Yet, even in this environment, a recent proposal by Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat of Texas, is a menacing standout. Her bill is an almost, and I'm quoting here, impenetrable word salad of convoluted provisions. However, what's clear, and that may be the only thing that's clear, is that the, quote, Leading Against White Supremacy Act of 2023 would gut the First Amendment and effectively create thought crimes. And let's remember, we've already pretty much got a thought police. Oh, and by the way, he notes, even being accused of espousing what they now called replacement theory, i.e., you're concerned about an invasion at the southern border, is enough to generate a federal charge under this abomination. The bill isn't going to pass, says Professor Turley. However, the anti-free speech elements of the bill are deeply disturbing because they reflect successful efforts that have already been successful in criminalization of speech in other countries, from Canada to Germany to the United Kingdom. More comic relief next, kind of anyway, also from Davos, and via the Daily Mail in this case, Biden's climate envoy, John Kerry, I'm not kidding here, this is what it actually says, has told a group of attendees Tuesday at the WEF, they're in Tyranny Central, that they were part of a, quote, select group of human beings brought together by a, quote, extraterrestrial force to save the planet. Whereupon he launched into a diatribe warning the attendees that time is running out to avoid the worst consequences of climate change. He didn't say it. I will. I can't help but think the worst consequences for the people working so hard to destroy everybody else anyway might be trials and tribunals for everything from crimes against humanity to treason, after conviction for which they might see what the constitutional worst consequences actually are. Here's another one, almost as obscenely ridiculous. After lawyers for the senile puppet-in-chief found, shazam, look what we got over here, more classified documents at an office, the one he used this time at a D.C. think tank, his captive Just Us department considered and then declined. Who could have imagined such a thing? A plan to have FBI agents monitor a search for classified documents at his various residences. Oh, good grief. Maybe they thought it would be too transparent, because everybody knows the FBI isn't there to find evidence. They're there to suppress it, destroy it, cover up the fact that it ever even existed, and make sure it never sees the light of day. But the excuse was it was, quote, in order to avoid complicating later stages of the investigations, and because Biden's attorneys had, quote, so quickly turned over the first batch and were cooperating, said the Wall Street Journal, trying to keep a straight face, citing people familiar with the matter. Instead, they note, the Department of Just Us decided it would be fine for Just Us and Biden's lawyers to conduct any additional searches they needed to by themselves. And they would agree to immediately notify their superiors at the cover-up department if they found anything else that might be potentially classified, after which law enforcement authorities would take the ashes. Would take whatever is left. Now, I don't have to tell you, but it's great that Zero Hedge points it out. This is the very same FBI that participated in a plan and fabricated evidence in the plot to frame former President Trump as a Russian asset, then ran cover for the Bidens during the 2020 U.S. election. Oh, yeah, and that was after they helped Hillary et al. Bleach bit and destroy evidence prior to the 2016 election that wasn't rigged well enough. But wait, still further back, It's the same FBI that seems to have helped in assassinating, or at least covering up their cooperation with, the assassination of another president they didn't like so many decades ago. Now, at this point, I will cite a couple of comments from Christina Layla's coverage of the very same story from the Gateway Pundit. The Justice Department has actually decided against having FBI agents, not known for integrity at this point anyway, monitor a search by Joe Biden's personal lawyers for classified documents. These guys don't have security clearances, yet they were allowed to rummage through Biden's boxes of documents in search of top secret materials, whereupon Biden's White House counsel was then allowed to facilitate the handing over of the oh-so-secret documents to the Department of Justice. And yeah, rather than the machine gun-toting agents Republicans have come to expect, descending on Biden's Delaware mansion, the Justice Department and Biden's lawyers came to an agreement on how the searches, such as they are, would be conducted. And you know it, don't you? If there's any other crimes here, trust us. They'll be sure to let everybody know. They're lying about so many things, folks, but at least it's becoming increasingly clear that even the far left and the deep state have had enough of the senile diaper wearer. The problem is, they've got to get rid of him in a way that won't expose the fact that, hey, they put him in there in the first place and aided and abetted all of the incredible crimes that have destroyed the nation leading up to it and ever since. This next story comes courtesy of the RAIR Foundation, that's R-A-I-R, and Amy Meck, about a whistleblower named Dr. Andrew Huff, who actually has kind of a sordid past because he comes from an infamous organization you may have heard of, the Echo Health Alliance. Yeah, that one, of Peter Daszak fame and gain-of-function research and their connections to perhaps the most evil man on planet Earth, Anthony Fauci. That Echo Health Alliance. But he seems to have had an epiphany and decided to go straight. Or maybe, folks, like many of us can probably relate to, he realized the organization he was working for wasn't exactly what he thought it was supposed to be. Says the story, in the United States, dozens of food processing plants have suspiciously caught fire over the past year. We've talked about a number of those here on this show, as have many others. Remarkably, though, and consistently, no one seems to have been present at the time of the fires. But the Eco Health Alliance whistleblower, Dr. Andrew Huff, who's a bioterrorism expert, military veteran, and a scientist, has a possible explanation for these many food supply fires. Huff has access to government information about simulating a food supply attack. That information comes from the U.S. Department of Aktung, Homeland Security, and their Food and Agriculture Sector Criticality Assessment Tool. It's called FASTCAT, which also includes which places are particularly at risk. And according to Huff, who authorities have harassed due to the nature of his work since at least 2019, the U.S. government coordinated the attacks on the food facilities. Yeah, you heard that right. I know it's shocking, but stay with me. In addition, he said, something remarkable has happened. The hard disk with all the FASTCAT data disappeared. Maybe they should have taken it to the Biden lawyers instead of letting the FBI deal with it. Since then, though, there have been about 200 food factory attacks around the world, most of them in the U.S., he explained, and he had another backup disk, so he was able to analyze the attacks. It turns out that the attacks exactly match what were called the most critical systems in the data set. Who could have thought it? He reported this to the Department of Aktung, Homeland Security, and the FBI, and you're probably not going to be surprised at what I note next. He never received a response. Huff knows that the FBI and the food industry have tried to investigate what he called the terrorist attacks, but they're getting nowhere, he said, and he suspects that a government-funded actor or globalist group like, hey, maybe those folks meeting in Davos, the World Economic Forum, are somehow behind it. Item from J.D. Hayes at Natural News about Wells Fargo and the fascism of public-private partnerships implementing their agenda on Once Free America. Wells Fargo Bank, he says, is making moves to impose corporate management's left-wing agenda on as much of the country as possible, leading to a further bifurcation of left v. right in an America that no longer has much in the way of freedom on any front. First, the bank has decided to end their relationship with a major gun dealer in Florida, indicating that they intend to further discriminate against the firearms industry and destroy what's left of the right to keep and bear arms. Brandon Wexler of Wex Gunworks in Delray Beach was told his business has become too risky and he'd better find himself another bank. Oh yeah, and we're canceling your business line of credit, too. I've been with him for 25 years, he said. I think this is a direct attack against gun dealers, because it's all happened so recently. A bank spokesperson denied that. The National Shooting Sports Foundation says Wells Fargo's decision to abruptly cancel all business with Wex Gunworks is just the most recent example of woke banking discrimination against the firearms industry. On then to today's economic meltdown update. We'll start with a couple of quick, at least semi-humorous headlines. MicroChef CEO has confirmed another 10,000 job cuts as tech layoffs intensify. We've lived through times of significant change, he said. And as I meet with customers and partners, a few things are clear. We're going to have to do more with less. Here's one that probably caused a collectivist gasp on Wall Street. 69-year-old Federal Reserve Board Chairman Jerome Powell, who is, they say, fully up to date, vaccinated and boosted, has tested positive for COVID-19 and is experiencing mild symptoms. Well, hey, at least he didn't drop dead suddenly with a heart attack or stroke that they'd have had to come up with an excuse about. He'll be isolating remotely from home. Here's another one from Zero Hedge. The Empire Fed's manufacturing survey says the headline has totally collapsed against a background that begins of some recent better-than-expected macro prints that have bolstered the, bogus soft landing thesis, which has spurred stocks higher and rate hike odds lower. The Empire Fed manufacturing survey just stole the jam out of the bull's donuts. The New York Fed's General Business Conditions Index crashed nearly 22 points to a negative 32.9 this month, and that is twice as bad as the weakest earlier estimates of analysts. Aside from the COVID lockdown idiocy in May 2020, this is the weakest print since March 2009. It's been in contraction 5 of the last 6 months. New orders dropped nearly 28 points to a minus 31.1, lowest since May 2020 during COVID time, making the third straight month of contraction, while shipments plunged by a similar amount and factory employment fell to its lowest level in more than 2 years, indicating hiring has essentially stalled. But they ask, what about the soft landing? The most dramatic news, however, and the one that almost certainly isn't going to get major front page play, at least not until the shelves at Walmart are empty, comes from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Hal Turner had it first, but we've been talking about it now for a very long time. They're officially open, they announced, to settling trades for oil and natural gas in currencies other than the almighty fiat Federal Reserve note, a.k.a. U.S. dollar. Quick, somebody better alert the Kirk casinos. Time to sell lots of paper gold and silver futures. Well, Zero Hedge, citing a number of sources, has the second and third witnesses on this one. Posar was right, says their headline. The Saudis have confirmed non-dollar oil trade plans in where else? WEF Central, Davos. And Tyler Durden's summary begins by noting that earlier this month, former New York Fed repo guru Zoltan Posar wrote what they called one of his most important reports in the year 2022, in which he described how Putin could unleash hell on Western financial systems by demanding that instead of dollars, Russian oil exporters be paid in gold, effectively pegging oil to gold and launching petrogold. Now, that was old news by year-end. Then Chinese President Xi's visit with Saudi and GCC leaders marked what was called the birth of the petro-yuan and a leap in China's growing encumbrance of OPEC's oil and gas reserves. That's because with the China-GCC summit, quote, China can now claim to have built their own special relationship, not only with the plus sign in OPEC plus, that means Russia, folks, but also with Iran and indeed all of OPEC plus. And at that time, Zoltan urged his readers to think of this timing in a diplomatic sense, calling this new relationship the dawn of the petro-yuan. But now, according to Bloomberg, Saudi Arabia is open to discussions about trade in currencies other than the dollar, said the kingdom's finance minister in Davos. Quote, there are no issues with discussing how we settle our trade arrangements, whether it's in the U.S. dollar, whether it's the euro, whether it's in the Saudi rial, said Mohammed Al-Jada'an to Bloomberg TV in Davos. I don't think, he added, we're waving away or ruling out any discussion that will help improve trade around the world, he said. But added, we do enjoy a very strategic relationship with China, and we enjoy that same strategic relationship with other countries, including the U.S., and we want to develop that with Europe and other countries who are willing and able to work with us, he said. See, it all sounds so wonderful, folks. How could this possibly be a negative for the spectacular privilege that now seems to be gone with the wind of the U.S. being able to print its debt into oblivion and foist it off on everybody else in the world? Well, because they had no choice if they wanted to buy oil. Concludes the Zero Hedge summary. This all makes it sound like the Biden regime isn't too high up on the kingdom's strategic planning. And so, given the comments from the kingdom's finance minister, Zoltan's ominous warning appears ever closer to reality. He called it dusk for the petrodollar and dawn for the petro-yuan. On this show, folks, we call it a warning and yet another word to the wise. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.